Good to be back with you this evening. Good to see each and every one of you here. I'd like to speak with you for just a few moments tonight on the subject of God's will and the different colors that it shows. And it's not the easiest subject. Some parts of it are quite easy, and other parts are not so easy, and this will not be a lesson that will just flood our minds, to the point of just, maybe not really being able to see it all. So I've tried to select just a number of scriptures that will help us to understand a little bit better the idea of God's will. There are individuals, there are Christians that I know who worry, and they don't necessarily worry about the things of this life and world, but they worry about their course decisions and course corrections along the way. They worry about their pathway. They worry about the will of God. Such individuals might even raise questions about their life, about, am I doing God's will? Is this path that I'm looking to take, is this God's will? Or some might even raise the question, am I fighting against God's will for my life? I think all those are valid questions and ought to be answered, but they need to be answered scripturally, and that's what we're going to try to do this evening. So I just want to draw an illustration for you so you all know for sure what I'm talking about. When we have our course of life, we have the path that we're going, we've made decisions, and we find ourselves on this particular course in life, and now we come to another stopping point, one of the thousands of stopping points we have, some little, some a little larger, and some very large. And a decision is to be made. And we have to make decisions every day of our life. But some of them are going to be very big. Some of them are going to completely alter the course of our life. And the decision is now to be made. And we have several options before us. And of these options, there is one that, and this is just how we are. There is one in particular that we're leaning towards, isn't there? And so we have a will. And that which we're leaning towards might very well be exactly how our course of life will continue on that in that way. Or there might be another thing we can add to the illustration where we run into an issue where we're thinking about this. We really want this to happen, and we really want it to happen. It might be a really big decision, and we want that to happen. And we're praying about it. We're asking other people to pray about it. And what happens is none of that ever happens. And our life takes a different course than what we were really wanting to happen. And you might call that God's will. I would call God's will anything that actually happens, because God is in fact in control. So that might be the change in the course of our life being God's will. But some struggle with this because, I have my will and I've prayed about it. But it clearly wasn't God's will in hindsight. So my concern is, all that time and all those prayers, I was pushing and fighting against what God's will really was for my life. You might be the kind of individual that thinks that way. You might be that that worrisome individual about these kinds of things. And if so, this lesson is very much so for you. But it's for all of us, even if we're not exactly of that kind of disposition. I want to turn over to Ephesians chapter 5 for a moment. Because in order to understand this idea of God's will, or whether we're doing God's will, or whether we end up fighting against God's will throughout our life, it's important first to understand the definition of God's will. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 15 Paul talks to the church at Ephesus. He said, "See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is." So here in this text, he is instructing them to walk circumspectly in their life. Circumspectly, you know, comes from the idea of circumspect or a circumference, a circle. And so circumspect is this illustration of a circle, walking in a circle, or the idea is turning all the way around, like a 360 as we are walking. So we're walking in this life, and circumspectly, you know, literally speaking, is we're constantly making a 360 all the way around. And so the point of the illustration of walking circumspectly is one that is incredibly cautious, one who is extremely watchful. And that's what God would have us to be as Christians. We are not going to close our eyes. We are not going to be unwatchful, but we are going to be very watchful. We're going to be looking to the left, to the right, behind us. That's the idea of walking circumspectly. You know, there could be an enemy coming up against us from behind. There could be Satan coming from behind. There could be something coming up to the sides or in front of us. And so the Christian is 360 degrees, a very watchful and cautious individual. And this is what keeps us out of problems. This is what keeps us out of falling into various temptations, because we see things much further away. And we can spot them, and before they come closer to where we have to deal with them, we've already been able to make a scriptural and accurate decision for whatever it might be. So we walk circumspectly, he says, not as fools, but as wise. And so the person who walks circumspectly is a person who walks wisely, and therefore who's not walking foolishly. The foolish person stumbles. The foolish person has their eyes closed, or they're blindfolded, and they're walking across the highway. No, that's not the idea. We are a watchful people as Christians. We're also redeeming the time in verse 16, and that's a part of our watchfulness. It's a part of our carefulness, is that we know that today matters. Today matters for myself, for everyone else. Today matters for my eternity. And so this idea of redeeming the time, buying the time, when we buy something, you know, it's something of value to us or necessity to us. And I think that's the idea here of redeeming the time, is we see the value in every day. We see the value in the time spent in every minute. And we're going to choose to live wisely in that minute. We'll choose to live circumspectly in that day, because we know the value of a day. In verse 17, He concludes, therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. So in connection to these ideas about how we are to conduct ourselves as Christians, he tells the brethren at Ephesus to understand what the will of the Lord is. What does that tell us about God's will? Well, first, it tells us that it can be understood. We can understand what God's will is. This text also tells us that if it is commanded out of us to understand what the will of the Lord is, this text would tell us that God has given us the resources by which we can understand His will. So, considering all that we've seen here in Ephesians 5, I want us now to turn over to Matthew chapter 7. Let's not forget what we have just learned as we look over here at Matthew, the 7th chapter, beginning in verse 21. Here Jesus, in preaching to the multitude in Matthew 7, verse 21, he said to them, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, 'Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" So Jesus began here, verse 27, by saying, not everyone who calls on the Lord, "Lord, Lord," not everyone who calls me by name, not everyone who claims to have a relationship with me, not everyone who does all kinds of fantastic things for me, prophesying in my name, casting out demons in my name, done many wonders in my name. Wow. You know, look at these people out there. What are they doing? They're doing all kinds of things. I mean, they're really putting out a lot of sweat and labor in all these various and sundry things that they're doing in the name of God. And certainly they are proclaiming to have a relationship with the Lord. And on the day of judgment, they certainly expect that. And they call his name, "Lord, Lord." But Jesus says, not everyone who calls me by my name and believes that they know me and believes that they have a relationship with me will enter the kingdom of heaven. But he identifies who will enter the kingdom of heaven. He says, but is he who does the will of my Father in heaven. He who does the will of my Father in heaven. Well, back in Ephesians, remember how critical the will of God was to every minute of our day as Christians. That we are to understand the will. Now we know why it's so important to understand the will of God, because it is only those who understand what the will of God is who can do the will of God. And it's only those who can do the will of God who will actually make it to heaven. And suddenly this subject has become a whole lot more important for us all. We're talking about the difference between heaven and hell for our eternal existence now. I must do the will of my Father. Paul told the church at Ephesus, understand that will. In your walk and your conduct, your everyday life, understand what the will of the Lord is. Look there again in verse 23. Notice the response of the Lord to these individuals who didn't understand. They didn't understand the will of the Lord. They were doing all kinds of things for him, but they didn't understand. His response to them is this, and I will declare to them, I never knew you. I don't have a relationship with you. He says, depart from me, You who practice lawlessness. So, the Lord said, those who would enter therein would be those who do the will of His Father in heaven. On the other side, you have individuals that are not entering in. Why? He says, because you practice lawlessness. He didn't go and say the same thing. He didn't say, it's because you didn't do the will of my Father in heaven. But that is what he said. Instead, he worded it a different way. He said, you who practice lawlessness. Lawlessness is in direct opposition in the text to the one who is doing the will of the Father in heaven. The doer versus the lawless one, the not doer. So you have the lawless one and you have the lawful one. One who lawfully serves the Lord and one who unlawfully serves the Lord. They're all serving the Lord in the text, aren't they? But one is lawfully doing it, the other is unlawfully doing it. So the one lawfully doing it in the context is one and the same as what Jesus says is the one who doeth, in the King James, who doeth the will of my Father in heaven. So when Paul told the Ephesians, back in chapter 5, verse 17, understand what the will of the Lord is, the Ephesians weren't standing there reading that text, from that letter from Paul, and pulling their hair out. Paul, you're asking the impossible. Understand what the will of the Lord is? How are we to know what the will of the Lord is? The will of God, if Paul told the Ephesians to understand it, then it means it must have been revealed. It must have been told to them for them to be able to understand it. And according to Jesus' words here, it was revealed. It was revealed within the law. People talk about plans. Does God have a plan for me? Does God have a plan? Does God have a special plan for me? Well, my response to you, you're probably not going to like, but He has a very special plan for you. He desires for you to be eternally saved. Now people, that's not the answer folks are wanting, I know. Some are wanting to hear, oh, He's got a special plan for you. Oh, you're going to be moving along, you're going to be moving on up, and you know, you're going to have a huge retirement fund and you know all these great things. He's got a special plan for you. Well, that's not the answer I can provide you with. But I can provide you with what I know from the revelation of the will of God is His will for you is that you'd be saved on the day of judgment. To me, there's nothing more special than that. So yes, He's got a special plan for you and me and everyone on this planet. He desires that all men be saved and all would come to a knowledge of the truth. And so the will of God is flooded with misunderstandings today that has caused us sometimes to even stumble on this concept of God's will. In John 7, verse 16... Jesus talked about the doctrine, His doctrine, His teachings, the teachings of Christ. And He said, my doctrine is not mine, but His who sent me, His Father in heaven. He says, if anyone wills to do His will, he shall know concerning the doctrine whether it is from God or whether I speak on my own authority. You see what the Lord just said there? He said, if any man, you or I, if we will, desire, that is, to do His will. Now what has He been talking about in the context? His doctrine, which He says is not of my own, but it's of the Father who sent me. So this is the doctrine of God. And if we will to do His will, we're going to recognize that doctrine. We're going to understand what the will of the Lord is. Jesus is using the term God's will and the word doctrine synonymously in the text. What is God's will? His will is His testament. We've heard of the last will and testament of individuals. God's will is His word. It's His testament. It is the new testament or new covenant. All these words are used synonymously throughout the scriptures. So, if one would ask themselves in their life, am I doing the will of God? The first thing we need to consider is the Bible. What has God revealed? Because that is the will of God for your life. He wills for you to do the things in which He has sent His Son. He wills for you to do the things in which He has written down for us and preserved for us all these years up until now, 2016. The words are still here for us. The wonderful words of life. He wills for our eternity in heaven with Him. And so this is what we see as far as the will of God. Now some might object to this. I don't see how, but some might object that the scriptures talk about something else as far as the will of God. And I would agree. But what we have talked about so far is really the most important part of this lesson. This is where it's at. This is what's critical for our life, is doing this will of God. That's what Jesus said. He who does the will of my Father in heaven, He who is lawful. He said, depart from me, you lawless ones, but the lawful enter in. The doers of God's will, they enter in. And so this is what's critical for our life. And we shouldn't spend time, I know it's hard for some folks, but hopefully we won't spend time getting bogged down and pulling our hair out into thinking, what's God's will for my life? What's God's will for today? The true focus and the true importance should be on the things that we've just talked about. The things that God has instructed for us and how we are to live our lives in service unto Him, so that one day we will see Him and live with Him for all eternity. However, there is a different context in the Bible that does speak of the will of God in a different way. And I want us to consider those things as well. In James chapter 4, verse 13, James talks a little bit about the will of God. And this is really where the hang-up is. This is really where people worry about God's will for, you know, my personal life, you know, in the course and the directions and the pathway and the road that I'm going to take, and the big decisions before me. What is God's will? What should I choose? What should I decide? And I really want to do this over here. And then in hindsight, we ended up doing something completely different. And it's like, well, it must have been God's will. And so was I fighting against God's will this whole time when I was striving after this other thing? That's where all this comes into play. So let's consider this. In James 4, verse 13, James says, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. And so, James is drawing this illustration of individuals saying, they're making big plans for their life. We're going to go over here, we're going to spend a year over here, and we're going to buy and sell, we're going to make a profit, then we're going to go and do this and that. And everyone has plans. And it's clear that James is not condemning an individual for making plans on this earth. But what he does condemn is the arrogance of the boast that I'm going to do this. I'm going to spend a year over here. And I'm going to buy and I'm going to sell and I'm going to make a profit without even considering the fact that our lives are weak. Our bodies are weak. James makes the point here that our life is but a vapor. How do we know? How could we boast? How could we be so arrogant to say, I'm going to go and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this? And, you know, he's talking about years, but we can even talk about days. How could we be so arrogant to say, I'm going to do this today? No, your heart can stop. Anything imaginable could happen to you by which you wouldn't be able to do that today. So he doesn't say, never make any plans. In verse 15, he says, instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will do this or that. Make your plans, but make your plans acknowledging that if the Lord wills, if he allows me to continue on for this time, then at that time, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. But always acknowledging the concept of, if the Lord wills, or we might say, Lord willing, we'll do this, Lord willing. We'll meet back here, you know, such and such hour, Lord willing. What we are doing is we are acknowledging that our life is a vapor in that statement. We are acknowledging that we just do not have that control to be able to be back here at such and such hour. But the Lord might be willing that we be there at such and such a time. And that's the idea. There's other scriptures that use these ideas as well. But I'm suggesting to you that these are different contexts than what we have already looked at in terms of the will of God. What we're seeing is vastly different in subject matter. 1 Corinthians 4:19 is another one that's similar to James 4, where Paul says to the Corinthians, but I will come to you shortly if the Lord wills, and I will know not the word of those who are puffed up, but the power. So here Paul's desire is to come to the city of Corinth and to be with the Christians at Corinth, and he wants to do that shortly. That's his plan, he says, if the Lord wills. So we see Paul in application of the text in James chapter 4. Let's see why these things are so different than what we have already looked at. Remember back in Ephesians 5:17, he says, understand what the will of the Lord is. Or back in Matthew 7:21, where Jesus says, it is he who does the will of my Father in heaven, would be the one that would enter therein. Well, the word will in these scriptures is thelema, if I'm pronouncing that right, I don't know. However, that is the Greek word there, and by definition, it is of what God wishes to be done by us, commands or precepts. So, these scriptures are using a particular Greek word that is specific to the point of will, as in, this is what God desires for us to be done. This is, you know, as it's defined also as his commands or precepts. So this is what God has commanded. Isn't that exactly what we saw in Matthew 7:21? The doer of the will of God is the doer of the law lawfully. And not lawlessly. This is the one who is doing the commandments. He's fulfilling the precepts. This is the lawful one. This is the one who is doing what God wishes to be done. What God revealed to them that he wishes to be done by them. But what we have just looked at, such as in James 4, or what Paul talked to the Corinthians about, is if the Lord wills. James talked about it as well. If the Lord wills, we'll be able to go and do this or that. Well, this is a completely different Greek word that is translated into English, will. So they're all translated as will, the will of God, but the words are entirely different. So in James 4, where he's talking about Lord willing, we'll go and do this, is a thelo, and the definition of it is simply this, to have in mind or intend to do. So one of these Greek words is a very strong word. The other is not so strong. One of them is referring to the will of God, as in, this is what God would have us to do in our life. His commandments, His precepts. This is how He would have us to serve Him. That's what Jesus was talking about, is that's the one who will enter into the kingdom of heaven. The doer of the will, the commands, the precepts of God. But James uses a completely different word. It's not to be mistaken with other scriptures that refer to the will of God. This word simply means to have in mind or intend to do. And that's exactly how James is using it. If the Lord wills, that is, if the Lord has this in mind as well, that we will meet back here at such and such hour, then if He intends for that to be done, then we'll find ourselves back here at such and such hour. So, in this lesson, we've ended up talking about two completely different subjects, all under the heading of the will of God. So it's very important for us to have this separation in our minds of the will of the Lord. His will is for us to do what He has commanded out of us. And certain few select scriptures do talk about things that God might have in mind or intend to do that would align with our plans. And that happens. Sometimes it doesn't align. That's why James said, if the Lord wills. The condition. What God intends to do might not align with what we would like to do tomorrow or the next day or next year. So we can make all these kinds of plans, but it is on the condition of if God has that in mind as well. If He's got it in mind as well, then our wills essentially will parallel and be in harmony with each other. And that's why we find ourselves sometimes with, oh, we really want to do this, or we want to make this decision, and it all happens and it all falls in place. But then other times we really want this in our life and we get something completely different. That's the condition, if the Lord wills. So, to do the will of God is different in Scripture than for God's will to be done. Doing the will of God is doing God's precepts. If we ask for God's will to be done, then we are acknowledging in that statement that we are living in a world that God controls, that we do not control. And so, Lord willing, we might make a plan. Lord willing, we might have an idea for what we might want to do tomorrow. If it aligns with the world that God controls, then so be it. If it doesn't, then we're going to be doing something different tomorrow. And that's just how it is. And it's not something to fuss about. It's not something to worry or to be concerned about. And that's where we sometimes have these issues of, oh, am I fighting against God's will in my life? Well, even if you are, it doesn't matter. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with us thinking, you know, I would like to make this decision over here, but then it doesn't even pan out. It's like, oh, I was fighting against God's will this whole time. Clearly, this was His will, this path I've taken. Well, I think we've run into a problem of not understanding what wrong is, what sin is. 1 John 3:4 tells us that sin is lawlessness. Sin is breaking the law. And let me ask you a question. If we're going through this path in our life and there's a decision to be made, a completely amoral decision, it's not a decision about right and wrong, about Scripture and, you know, and breaking God's law. It's just a decision, choosing a new job or what have you, you know, just a decision we're making. And, you know, we've got this in our mind. We want to make this decision, but it doesn't pan out. Well, of all that time that we were praying and pushing and working towards this particular decision over here, were we in wrong? Were we in sin? Have we damaged our relationship with God? Certainly not. Don't ever worry, friends, about fighting against the will of God. There's no need to worry about it. God knows that we don't know what's in store. He knows that we don't have any control. That's why we say, if the Lord wills, I'd like to make this decision over here. I'm going to start to pursue it. If it doesn't pan out, God's in control. But I have not sinned. I have not done wrong by pursuing a particular decision in my life. Sin is committing lawlessness. Sin is the transgression of God's law by definition. And so I have not sinned by pursuing a particular decision in my life that just simply did not pan out. And so we might consider ourselves maybe fighting against God's will. You know, I don't know if I would use that terminology, but let's play off of that for a moment. We might consider that we're fighting against God's will. In hindsight, we see ourselves fighting against God's will, that is. But we always have to remember, has that been revealed to us in the Scriptures? Of what decision we should have made at that point in time? Well, no. Was it a law to you? Well, no. Well, then you haven't been lawless. You haven't broken the law, and therefore you haven't committed sin. So, all in all, it comes back around as something that we just don't need to worry about. We can make a plan, we can make a thought, we can say if the Lord wills and leave it at that. Because we understand as Christians that God is fully in control of this life. And we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. We don't know what the next minutes of this day is going to bring. God's going to do what He intends to do. And that's how James used that idea of the will of God. Whatever God intends, that's what's going to happen. He's in control. But what we need to focus on, let's put those things out of our mind. That should be something so small in our life, is to spend time thinking about that kind of stuff. What we need to be focused on is doing the will of God in our life. That's a completely different subject matter. We need to be focused on what will God have me to do. I need to sit down, I need to read the revealed will of God. I need to read the Word. Because I need to understand, just like Paul commanded the Ephesians, I need to understand what the will of God is for my life. If you have any more questions about this, please let me know. If there's anyone here who is yet to come unto the Lord for salvation, then we invite you this evening to come in repentance of your sins, to confess in the name of your Lord, to be baptized for the remission of your sins. If that's your need tonight, won't you please come forward while together we stand and sing.